Well, good morning. Glad to see you guys. I said earlier, I'm Pastor Brent, and I'm one of the pastors here at Ashworth. And I have to tell you, I'm constantly amazed at children, and at my house, that's a big amazement because I have so many. But I'm constantly amazed at children and how they develop, but also their inquisitiveness. That just, it seems like as soon as a child begins to talk and walk and move, that they are constantly just in awe of all the world around them. And then they begin to ask questions. Any other parents out there like, yes, my children, yes. And not only do they learn to ask questions, they also learn very early on to tell you no, which is amazing as a parent, right? Don't tell me no. But they ask us all these questions. And as we grow, it's amazing to me to watch people. Because we start off, I mean, I believe probably all of us start off with that inquisitive nature, just with this awe of the world around us. And then as we grow up, one of two things typically happens. We will keep that inquisitiveness and kind of think, oh, we just continue to question and look around and be amazed at the world and wonder things like, why? Or we grow up in that, for a variety of reasons, maybe that inquisitiveness, that questioning of life just kind of is gone. And we just don't do that as much as we used to. Maybe it's because the responsibilities leave us little time for curiosity. And we don't have time to ask questions because I'm too busy. Or maybe it's just because we feel safe enough in our world that we don't think we have to worry about it. We've got enough of the world figured out that questions just aren't needed at this point, and we're okay. And we don't have to be as inquisitive as we once were. Or maybe you grew up in an environment where questions were discouraged. And you heard enough times, because I said so, to realize that, okay, questions are not appropriate, so I just won't ask them. Sometimes that happens as well. Or it could be that you just have enough kids that ask you questions all the time that they're asking enough questions for all of you. I read an article this week that said, curious kids will ask 73 questions a day. Yeah, and if you take into account, you know, let's take out the 8 hours, if you're lucky, your kids sleep. That leaves 4 questions an hour that your kids will ask. It's way more than that. Okay, see? Way more than that. All right, see? So study, wrong, didn't ask the right people. So you know where we're coming from, right? You're just exhausted with questions all the time. But the article went on to say that many of the questions kids ask, we as parents are struggling to answer. Can I get an amen on that one? That's right. And I can understand the struggle to answer a lot of my kids' questions, but I can understand why they ask. Because I've always been inquisitive. I've always wanted to know why. One of my favorite shows on television, I don't watch much anymore, but I love it. It's How Things Work. I love to know why. I love to see the behind the scenes. I love to dig into why does this do what it does, not just that it does. It's how my brain works. I'm wired that way. So I love the opportunity and the ability to ask questions. But you know what's very interesting is that in most of the world, that's acceptable to ask those questions and to be inquisitive and to dig in. But when it comes to faith, and the Bible, and Jesus, and Christianity, questions become very tricky. For some people, questions are even viewed as attacks. And that the pure and simple fact that you would even ask a question means you are a faithless, godless pagan, and those questions aren't welcome here. Anybody ever experienced that before? See, I see some head nods out there. You understand. And sometimes even when we ask the questions, the response we get leaves us wanting. So you may ask a question and you get the answer, well, the Bible says so and that's good enough. Now, not to be a pagan pastor or anything this morning, but you know, sometimes it's not good enough. Can I get an amen on that? And sometimes we just want an honest place to go where we can ask honest questions without feeling like a godless pagan in the process. To be able just to ask these honest questions. But if enough times we get shut down, if enough times we are thumped to where we're told, don't ask that, don't do that, don't go that direction, be certain, just know what you believe, it's all good, just ignore those doubts, because doubts have no place here, questions have no place here. That sounds good on the surface. But if you're a person like me, that question never really goes away. In fact, that question moves from the front of my mind to the back of my mind, where it sits like a tumor. Not a benign tumor, not doing anything, but a tumor that's just dripping like water in my life, just continuing, annoyingly there. And if we're not careful, what we will find is those questions that are left unanswered, or at least brought out, will begin to erode our faith to the place where we can even just walk away. And that's not good. You know, one of the things I love about Ashworth is that I hope that we are a place where doubt is encouraged and questions are encouraged. Because that's where true faith is developed, is in the asking. And that's really why we're beginning a new series today that's called The Big Three, Life's Biggest Questions. And those questions are, you see them on the screen, where did I come from? Why am I here? And what happens after I die? And so over the next three Sundays, this is what we're going to be looking at, hopefully providing some clarity, but I will caution you to say that we may not provide 100% certainty. And if you're looking for certainty, you may be in the wrong place. We're going to explore, we're going to dig in, we're going to present options, some of which you will latch onto and think, oh, I can really dig that. Some of which you're going to look at and go, I can't believe my pastor believes that or would even present that, because that seems godless. Got your curiosity piqued now, don't I? But we're going to see what we can do in answering these questions that we believe many people, and maybe even you, struggle with. So I thought we'd start with an easy one today. Where did I come from? Now that's pretty straightforward, right? Because the easy answer to that is, you know, if you don't know, when a mommy and a daddy love each other very much, I'm only teasing. That is not where this message is going. If you need help with that question, Pastor Ryan and Pastor Amy will be available following the service to educate you on that. No. Where did I come from? Anybody ever asked that question before? Why am I here, but how did I get here? What was the series of events that created me to be here? And yeah, we can think about our parents if you must, and the 9 months you spent gestating in your mother's womb and growing, but on a bigger, more philosophical or existential scale, where did you come from? Why are you here? And I must admit that even as I approach that question, there's a conflict within me that comes up, because I've kind of grown up in a faith tradition that automatically tells me this: to approach this question, you have to pick a side. You have to pick a side, because there are two opposing viewpoints here, and they don't mesh and they don't line up. And so you better pick your side. Which way are you going to go? And on the one side, you have Christians, you have faith, the Bible, and Jesus. And on the other side, you have science and intelligent thought and rationalism. And somewhere along the way, this idea that faith and science could not coexist really began to infiltrate the church and infiltrate our culture. And with that idea permeating our culture, if you follow science, you must be a godless, faith-denying, Jesus-hating monster. And if you are a Christian, you must be an empty-headed, blind-faith-believing, Kool-Aid-drinking moron. I mean, seriously, that's where we kind of draw the lines, isn't it? I don't know about you, but neither of those options sound very appealing to me. That's because we've created this false dichotomy. Either science or faith, either God or evolution. And the biggest problem with this false dichotomy is that what happens to you if you are in one camp or the other. Let's say you're in the faith camp, where I was. And I grew up believing a certain thing about creation, 6 literal days, 24-hour period, young earth. And then you go to school or you encounter things in high school or in college, and you have people that look at you and go, the earth is, 17.4 billion years old, and things have evolved and changed and morphed and all this. And as much as you want to look at that individual and go, you don't know what you're talking about, the degrees on the wall probably say otherwise. It doesn't mean they're a godless pagan. In fact, if you can believe this, the stat I read this week said that there are 40% of the scientists in the world are believers. So how are they in that field and believers and yet maybe hold to a different view than what I grew up with? And let me just say this. I am not saying that view is completely wrong. But what I am saying is that as you grow up and as you are confronted with other ideas, if your entire theology is built on this, 6 days of creation, 24-hour periods in young earth, when these other ideas come in, do you know what happens to your faith? It is gone. Because if this isn't true, then none of it's true, and you just walk away. How can I believe any of it? But what about, I don't want to just pick on Christians here, because let's think about the other side. If you're one of these godless scientists that we're talking about, atheistic people, and in science you think everything must be explained, everything has a reason, and we can look at it in a lab, and therefore it must be true. What happens when you get to a place in life where you go, science can't explain everything, which it can't? In fact, as I was studying this week, I ran across a guy by the name of Dr. Francis Collins. He's a medical doctor, an MD, and a PhD. He is the current director of the National Institutes of Health and the former director of the Human Genome Project. Okay? A little bit of credibility here, right? Guy may know what he's talking about a little bit. And he was at graduate school an atheist. He is self-professed atheist in graduate school. And in that moment where he's studying and researching in his 20s, he gets to a place where he realizes that science, the science he loved so much, was unable to answer questions like we are going to ask in this series. He assumed that faith was purely emotional and irrational. But he found the writings of an Oxford scholar by the name of C.S. Lewis, who helped him to understand that this dichotomy that we have created doesn't exist. That you don't have to leave your brain at the door in order to follow Jesus. And in his testimony, and you can find it on YouTube or there's an article on CNN, he says at the age of 27, he realized that faith that he did discounted completely before could exist, but it did require a leap. But reason alone could not prove or disprove God's existence. And as he began to study more, he realized that the God he was seeking was revealed in the real person and the historical person of Jesus Christ. And he says this, he wrote, "After resisting for nearly 2 years, I found it impossible to go on living in such a state of uncertainty, and I became a follower of Jesus." He continues to write this. He says, "So some have asked, doesn't your brain explode? Can you pursue an understanding of how life works using the tools of genetics and molecular biology and worship a creator God? Aren't evolution and faith in God incompatible? Can a scientist believe in miracles like the resurrection? Actually, I find no conflict here. And neither apparently do the 40% of scientists who claim to be believers." You see, we have created this idea that it's one or the other. And as we think about the question, where do I come from? I want to begin by saying we need to lay aside this dichotomy, this false dichotomy that we've created, that it's faith or science. Because it's very possible and probable, and I'm sure that it is, that the science that we want to discount sometimes from a position of faith is the exact science that God created. And we can find a way for the two of these things to peacefully exist together. And the nice thing is that if we have created this false dichotomy, then we are the ones that can tear it down. And I hope that we will do so beginning today. So if we get rid of that and we say, okay, science doesn't necessarily, is not anti-faith and faith is not anti-science, let's go back to the question, where did I come from? And I want you to know that in that question there is an inherent tension that exists. And I hope that you can be okay with living in the tension without fully understanding when and how everything came about. Because what I think we need to see is when we look to the Bible, we need to understand why the Bible is written the way it is to get to the truth that the Bible is asking us to see. So we begin very, very basically with the truth, or what is the truth I think we should see. We just go to Genesis 1. And I'm not even going to read the whole verse because it's just this much is needed today. In the beginning, God created. And we're just going to stop right there. You see, the foundational truth that I believe we come to is that God created. God created. When Collins looked back and tried to understand why things were the way they were, he understood that there were inherent problems with the scientific method that science couldn't explain. And so that's where he began to say there must be something not just natural about what came about. It must be something supernatural that caused things to be the way they are. Unfortunately, I think many times in the church, we want to put the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable. You know what I'm saying? And we want to look at the wrong thing. And we want to say, well, let's keep reading Genesis 1 and let's highlight this. And what I'm telling you today is sometimes we're asking the Bible to do things that the Bible was not intended to do. And that's where we have to pull back just a little bit and say, okay, so what is the Bible teaching us? And the Bible is teaching that God created everything. That there was a moment where nothing existed but God. He was, He is, has always been. What was God doing before He created? I don't know. Ask Him when you get to there, and we'll discover that maybe in message 3. What happens when we die? You know, what God was and is, and He existed. But there was nothing but God. And all of a sudden, through the spoken word of God, everything came to be. Now, how did that happen? I don't know. I wasn't there. I can't tell you. Was it a Big Bang? Maybe. I don't know. I don't have a problem with the Big Bang theory, honestly. But what I do know is that science will tell us that there was a definite fixed point in history at some point, whether it was 6,000, 10,000, 100,000, or 17 billion years ago, there was a fixed point in time where nothing existed, and now things exist. And as Collins thought about that question, what Collins came to is he says, nature cannot create itself. That can't happen. And if you can look at it and say, well, but these atoms, they crash together. Where did the atoms come from? There always has to be an uncaused cause. That's the cosmological argument for the existence of God, if you're curious about that kind of thing. And what we would look at it, and we would take from Genesis chapter 1, is that in the beginning God, the eternal God, the everlasting God, created. And that is the truth that we need to come to. The fact that there's something instead of nothing, science can't explain, but God can. And here's what I found interesting in my study is that as much as science might try to explain origins, it simply cannot account at this point where if the first things came from. It just can't do it. And even one article I read said that that wasn't even Darwin's point. When he wrote his theory of evolution, he wasn't trying to necessarily explain origins. He was trying to explain how we got here, not where it all started. You see, sometimes we have to be careful, though, regardless of what side we're on, when we find gaps in science or find gaps in faith, that we want to fill those gaps with the other thing. Because this is something that I think a lot of people of faith try to do, is we look and we say, well, science doesn't have this answer, so it must be God. And the problem is that when science does find an answer, what happens to faith? What happens to God? So we want to just understand from the perspective of the writer of Genesis, most likely Moses, what are we being taught here? What is the writer trying to say? And that's really the second point of this message, is that we need to realize that when Genesis was written, it wasn't written to a 21st century audience. One of the things I read this week says the Bible was written for us, but not to us. And I may have that backwards, I don't know. But you understand what I'm saying. We are not the original audience. The Bible was written, the Genesis was written in the ancient Near Eastern culture. Middle East, between the 4th and the 6th centuries BC is when we're talking about. What kind of culture existed in that time? Do you realize that the Bible's account of creation is not the only creation story that was popular at the time? Every culture had their creation story. Most of them didn't look like the Bible. Most of them looked like warring gods that were created, and out of the chaos, they battled over each other, and then the world came into existence, and there's a slain sea monster that created the world, and the blood of slain gods is what humans were created for. That's the context. But what we need to realize is that there is a big difference between what they say happened and what Moses and Genesis says happened. And to me, this is the most important thing about this message. You see, every other story of creation, humanity's role is one of slave. Created to serve the wishes and the whims of a deity or deities. Think about how Genesis is written. Are we written into the story as slaves? No. Are we written into the story as servants to just run around and, oh, yes, God, whatever you need? Not in the beginning. Because in the beginning, when God created humanity, he placed us here as co-rulers with him. He didn't create us as slaves. He created us as kings. Think about that in the ancient Near Eastern context. When Moses wrote Genesis, they're probably at the base of Mount Sinai. The people of Israel have gone through their history, and they're wanting to understand the story. And I get the point where somebody wants to sit around and say, you have grown up your entire life listening to these stories, how you are just at the whim and wishes of a deity. But in the beginning, God created you and created the world for your pleasure. And he created for you to be rulers and subduers of the world. And in the other stories where you are an afterthought and you are a pawn in a story being told, in the story of God, humanity is the climax of the story, the crowning glory of God's creation. We want to focus on things that really don't matter. Was it 6 literal days? Who cares? God created us to rule with him, period. And if it took 6,000 years or 17 billion years, it doesn't matter, because how and when aren't as important as that he created us this way, period. And we should be excited to understand that a God who got his hands dirty when he created us, when he breathed into us the breath of life, did so not so we could grab him a beer from the fridge when he's watching television. He did so because he looked at us before we were ever created and he said, I love you. I want to know you. I want you to know me. That's the importance of the creation story. You see, and I think we sometimes get off track on the other questions And we forget why this important. Why this is important. Where did I come from? You were created by God. Not some accident, no matter what your parents may have told you. You're not worthless. You're not. It's not that you shouldn't be here. No. You were created by God. This is a good slide, and I forgot it, and I need to go back and say it. When we look at Genesis, sometimes we ask it to do things it wasn't written to do. We want to look at it as if it's a scientific framework, and it's really not. It was written as a theological framework. Go back to everything I said about the people around them, the surrounding cultures. How much a slap in the face to those existing creation stories would Genesis be to say, gods, there is no gods, there's one God. Slaves, you're not slaves. You're the crowning achievement of God's creation. You were created to rule with Him. Not less than the creatures of the earth, you're above them. That's how God created you to be. On purpose. Why is this important? Because I believe if we have the idea that we are just a random collection of atoms that just happen to slam together in the right way, what's the point? What's the value of life? This is something else Collins struggled with. He called the moral law. Why are we moral? Why do we care about doing good if everything is just random chance and accident? But it changes completely if we understand that there was a purpose and a meaning behind you being here today. It's very important because what you believe about our existence and our origin will determine how you think about yourself and how you live. And it is critical that we understand that we have been created by God. And by saying that, I want you to know there's a lot of space for us to believe how that happened. And you know what? We can love each other and debate it and have fun with it and still all love each other in the end. Whether we believe 17 billion years of evolution or 6,000 years in 24 days or 24 hours, 7 days, it doesn't matter. Because the foundational truth we come to is that God created us. Is science right or wrong? I don't know. I'm not telling you it's wrong. I'm not telling you it's right. I'm just saying it is. But I'm telling you that you can believe science and God at the same time. And we need to understand the limitations of science, and we need to understand where faith takes us. Because I think the complex answer, the complex question of where did I come from, doesn't get a simple answer. One thing I read this week was an example, and I thought it was very appropriate, and it said this. It said, imagine you walk into a room and you see a pot of boiling water, and you ask yourself the question, why is that water boiling? You can look at it from a scientific perspective, and you can say, well, the molecules are moving fast, and it's generating heat, and water has a boiling point, and the water is reaching its boiling point, and bubbles are coming out. It's boiling, and there's your scientific from a pastor answer right there. Or, you know how else you could answer the question, why is the water boiling? Because I want a cup of tea, which is more likely. You see, sometimes we forget that we as human beings are incredibly, incredibly, incredibly complex. We are more than just atoms that have formed together. We have emotions. We love and we hope. We experience grace and forgiveness. And these things don't fit into a naturalistic, scientific worldview, which allows us to say with confidence, we're created by God. The glowing achievement of His creation with intrinsic value and purpose. And that's what we'll get to next week. Now, I just close with this, that, you know, as we think about being created by God, that means we are valuable. We just spent 6 weeks talking about who we are in Christ, and really this is a prequel message to all those, because if we don't understand the value that God places on us, we'll never believe any of those six things. You know, maybe you're sitting here today and the value that you find in yourself is nothing. The message you need to hear today is that regardless of what voices have been speaking into your life, is that you have value. God has created you on purpose, and that's great. God made you. You're no accident. You're not a mistake, and you're valuable because God says you're valuable. You have meaning because God says you have meaning. You are loved by the one who shaped you and formed you and who created you and gave his life for you in Jesus Christ. And as I said earlier, don't miss this point. The reason we were created wasn't just to enjoy creation, even though that's part of it, not just to work and rule and subdue, and that's part of it. But we were created to know the Creator. That's his desire. And granted, humanity screwed it up. We disobeyed, we turned our backs, we wanted to be God. We said thanks but no thanks, and sin entered into the world, and with sin, spiritual death. But God was not deterred. God knew that there was a way to overcome all that, and he put that plan that was already in his mind into action. And we find a restoration and a reconciliation with God through the work of Jesus Christ on the cross. You may be sitting there today and you think, I feel no value, I feel no relationship with this God you're talking about. Today you can know that. Maybe you've been following Jesus, but right now in this moment you feel distant and you need to hear this message that God created you and loves you. I'm going to ask the praise team to go ahead and come. Our time is running short, but this is important. God created you. You have value. You have meaning. Beyond what science may tell you, beyond what your culture may tell you, beyond what anybody may ever in your life have told you. And this morning, as we sing this final song, we're just going to open it up. You sing, but as we sing, if you struggle, if you want to take that step to follow Jesus, if you struggle finding your value, knowing that God truly cares about you, we're going to have people up here up front that are wanting to pray for you, to help you feel and know and experience the love of God, because in the beginning, God created you.